Good morning. Pleasure to see all your smiling faces. Beautiful day here. Beautiful city of New York. Let's talk about some facts as to where we are today. Everybody knows who's with us today. From my left, Dr. Jim Mylotaris, Robert Mojica, Budget Director, Melissa DeRosa, Secretary to the Governor, Gareth Rhodes, young genius. Total hospitalizations down. Great news. 5,187. The net change is down. That's good news. Intubations are down. That's very good news. New COVID cases are down to 246, which is actually lower than we were when this first started. So we're back to a point earlier than we were when this COVID crisis hit us and we started that spike. So that's really good news. The number of deaths, 105, that's terrible news. The relatively, it's better than it has been. Still 105 families who are grieving today, and they are in our thoughts and prayers. But you see the overall trajectory of this situation, March 20th to May 20th, been a period of time that will go down in history. A lot of pain, unique period, but we got through it. We got through it. We got over the mountain, literally and figuratively. We're not talking about reopening across the state. We're doing it region by region. Rockland County today is eligible for elective surgery and ambulatory care. When we open up for elective surgery in the hospital system, it means we have the hospital bed capacity. One of the mad scramble, if you remember early on, was to make sure we had enough hospital capacity because the projections were we would need double our hospital capacity in this state. So we stopped elective surgeries. Opening up elective surgeries means we have hospital capacity. When we reopen a region, we start to reopen a region, there will be increased activity, more people are coming out. That does not necessarily equate to an increase in the number of cases. It does not have to be that increased activity means more cases. It tends to be true, but it doesn't have to be true. You can have more activity, and if people take the right precautions, you don't necessarily need to see a rise in the number of cases. And none of this is preordained. As you increase activity, what will happen is a function of what we do. And that's not just rhetorical. If you tell me how New Yorkers react with increased activity, I will tell you what will happen to the infection rate. It literally depends on what we do. And everyone has a role to play as we go forward. You reopen shops for curbside retail. How do the shopkeepers, the retail owners, how do they perform? How do the employees perform? How do the employers who have people coming back perform? And probably most importantly, as individuals, how are we acting and how are we performing? Are we maintaining social distancing, et cetera? Of all the bizarre things we've gone through, this fact is probably one of the most important facts to me. Logic would have suggested that first responders would have had the highest infection rate, right? Just common sense. The nurses, the doctors, the EMS workers who are first responding to COVID-positive people, working with COVID-positive people all day long, they had to have the highest infection rate, right? Just logic. Think about those emergency rooms. People working 12, 14, 16, 18 hours a day with COVID-positive people. They must have had the highest infection rate. NYPD, first responders, fire department, they must have had a higher infection rate. The first responders, the frontline workers, wind up having a lower infection rate than the general population in that area. How can that possibly be? Because the PPE works. Those masks work. We've literally tested all the frontline workers, transit workers. They're driving the buses. They're encountering hundreds of people a day. They're driving the trains, subway system, on stations, in cars. Healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, hospital staff, NYPD, fire department, correction officers in state prisons with a congregate population, state police office of court administration. They all have a lower percentage than the general population. Now, it's good news for the frontline workers, and we were all worried about what they were doing. But there's a message for all of us, which is that the PPE actually works. The mask is not just a social symbol, right? This is not do it because we're asking you to do it. The surgical mask, this mask, is the same thing that is given to the frontline workers. They're not using anything different. If it reduced the infection rate for them, it will reduce the infection rate for you. But you have to wear it. Now, we say that employers must provide this to employees when they go back to work. If they do not get one, employees should call this number and report an employer who is not operating with the right precautions. Also, we're starting our tracing operation, and this is totally new. A person who tests positive, the tracers will then contact that person and ask who they may have exposed. And you could get a phone call following up on this tracing information, saying you were with John Smith last night, John Smith is now positive, you may want to be tested. On your telephone, if you have one of the new fancy phones, which I do not, it will come up NYS contact tracing. You should answer that call. It's not a hoax, it's not a scam, it's not a fraud. That is an official message saying New York State contact tracing is calling. So if you get that message, take that phone call. It's for your health, it's for your family's health. Small businesses are struggling. The numbers of small businesses that they're projecting may not come back are really staggering. We're trying to do everything we can on a state level. I hope the federal government passes an additional small business relief program. But we are extending the sales tax filing. We extended it from March 20th to May 19th. We're now going to extend it to June 22nd. We understand that they have financial issues, obviously. So the state is doing everything that they can. On schools, we adopted a statewide policy for our schools. May 1st, we announced K-12 and college would be closed for the rest of the academic year. Schools obviously pose risks. They're places of gathering. They're on buses. They're in classrooms. How do you reduce density in a classroom? How do you reduce density in a cafeteria, on a school bus, et cetera? How do you get children to wear masks? And we have another development that we're tracking, which is the COVID-related child illness. Ms. Russo has done great work on this. I believe, and I've said this from the start, this did not present as a COVID situation because it's not respiratory. And we were told early on that children are not affected by COVID. And that was one of the pieces of news that actually reduced anxiety early on. We're now starting to see that children who test positive for COVID or test positive for COVID antibodies are developing these inflammatory symptoms. Inflammation of the blood vessel, inflammation of the heart, but it's quite serious, and we've lost a number of children. New York State Department of Health was the first to really investigate this. The more they investigated, the more cases they found. Last Thursday, there were 7 countries that also investigated and found cases. There were 17 states that found cases, okay? This was last Thursday. Today, there are 13 countries and 25 states. This is one of those situations where the more they look, I believe the more they're going to find. So when we're talking about schools, again, the facts have changed from the quote-unquote experts, because there are no experts on this COVID virus. I've learned that the hard way. Children are not affected. Well, now maybe children are affected, right? And when you're talking about schools and you're talking about children and you're talking about density, exploring the situation and making sure that this is not a widespread situation affecting children. They're not even sure the duration after the COVID exposure that this might occur, because this is all a case of first impression. But this is a related issue that does affect children, and obviously it's something we're very concerned about. So, question was on summer school. Would summer school open? Summer school is not going to open statewide for in-class teaching. It will be through distance learning and meal programs and child care services for essential employees will continue. As in terms of opening up school for the fall, it's still too early to make that determination. We want to get more information on this inflammatory syndrome. We also want to see how the development for a treatment vaccine proceeds. We will issue guidelines beginning of June on what schools would need to do to come up with a plan to prepare to open. The schools will do those plans. They'll provide them to the state in July. The state will approve those plans or not approve those plans in July, all in preparation for an opening in September. But again, we don't want to make that decision until we have more facts. And as the facts keep changing, prudence dictates that you don't make a decision until it's timely, so you have the most recent facts to make the decision. We're coming up to Memorial Day weekend. Downstate beaches that are open tomorrow, Jones Beach, Sunken Meadows, Hither Hills, Robert Moses, they're on Long Island. Those beaches open at 6 a.m. They close at 9 p.m. Swimming is allowed from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And there's Lake Welch Beach in Harriman State Park. Just a note on these beaches. There are certain rules on beaches that are operating, primarily 50% capacity, and then social distancing on the beach. No contact activities, obviously. Social distancing will be enforced. Masks are required to be worn when social distancing isn't possible. But there is such a demand in the New York City area to get to a beach, to get some respite. It's Memorial Day weekend. People want to get out of the homes. 50% capacity. Those beaches may reach capacity at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. So that's something to take into consideration. I'm a Queens boy. It's a ride to these beaches. And you don't want to take that ride and get all the way out there and find out the beach is already closed. Again, this is a first time for all of us, but 50% capacity with this pent-up demand, those parking lots will reach capacity very quickly. So take that into consideration when you're making your plans. This week is National EMS Week. And it's a time to thank the EMS workers who just were on the front lines and did a magnificent job. Some of them actually gave their lives to this, and we are all very, very grateful to them, the EMS workers, as well as all the frontline workers. But to those who we lost in this battle, and it was a battle, it is a battle, we want to say a special condolences to their families. Really, everybody knew. They knew what inferno they were running into, and they ran into the fire for us. Everybody knew COVID-19 was dangerous, but they didn't stay home. They didn't call in sick. Some people volunteered to come from across the country to help us here in New York, and they lost their lives. We should remember that. And when we're in the midst of this now, when we get a chance to reflect on what has been done here, what we've gone through, and how people reacted, Winston Churchill, never was so much owed by so many to so few. COVID-19, it could kill you. Everyone stay home, except the frontline workers and essential workers. We need you to go to work. Well, I thought you just said COVID-19 could kill me. Yes, but you have to go to work anyway. And they did. And they did. Hospital workers, NYPD, fire department, EMS, grocery store workers, delivery boys, delivery women, they showed up. God bless them. God bless them, and we thank them.